Shadowcast, episode 20. Hello there, I'm TC Parmalee, your guest host and narrator for this episode. Episode 20 is The Voice by the talented Andrea Dean Van Scoy. She is a best-selling author and award winner and owner of Twisted Dreams and Worlds Within Worlds Beyond magazines. You can find her on MySpace and Twitter as Gothic Scribe. That's Scribe spelled S-C-R-Y-B-E. Now, I'd like to prepare you for this episode. Jason was kind enough to let me try a few things. I went into geeky girl mode at the beginning of this week, so just bear with me. One of the things he did let me try was having two voices narrate. That's all I'll say about that. So, if you would kindly sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for The Voice by Andrea Dean Van Scoy, narrated by T.C. Parmalee and Jason Warden.
Are you ready, my sweet?
Norel Federiconi started to speak, but a raised hand caused her to recoil. She knew all too well what that gesture meant.
Don't even think about it, bitch. Just nod.
She dropped her head, her eyes welling like they always did when he was so mean to her. She couldn't help it. All she wished for was a kind word, a truly kind word from Franco. Tears spilled down her cheeks. She hadn't asked to be this way, or maybe she had. Still, Franco didn't have to be so cruel. Didn't he deserve to be punished for how he treated her? Her face burned. She felt her body contort awkwardly as he roughly pulled her in front of the tall, oval mirror that seemed to be the only thing elegant in the dingy and ancient dressing room. Elegant second only to her. She gazed at her reflection carefully in the mirror. No matter how many tears she cried, no matter how many beatings she suffered, no matter how many worries caused her sleepless nights, she was still beautiful. Tall and thin with straight shoulders, a flawless complexion and golden shining hair that surrounded her like a white halo, she was a vision. She blinked and more tears spilled down her cheeks as she felt the brush pull through her hair. Franco always brushed her hair before she went on, if he wasn't pulling it in anger. He was actually being gentle, this time. Her eyes drifted down from her perfect face to her full breast, the red velvet gown accentuating every curve, all the way down to the red-heeled feet that she couldn't see beneath the rich opulence of the sumptuous fabric. She was tired. Her mind drifted back to the early days in her career when she was new to what the roar of the crowd could do for her. She was shy and naive back then, and it took her a while to get used to the crows of encore, encore, that nearly deafened her. She loved her fame and she loved her fans, but it was more than she could keep up with. She never got enough rest, it seemed, so Franco began to give her pills. Pills to wake her up, pills to put her to sleep, pills to bring her up when she was sad, pills to calm her when she'd been up for 3 days straight, until she finally had a psychotic episode. The police found her wandering the streets in her nightgown babbling about the devil. Franco had her committed overnight, for her own good, he assured her, and was prescribed something that she couldn't pronounce. Franco always made sure that she took her medicine and punished her when she didn't. With each performance, she knew that the next one had to be better or she would be sorry. Franco counted the throngs of people that showed up to hear the Angel of Light, as she had been dubbed, sing. And if there was even one less person in attendance than the time before, she was beaten. She knew that one day her star would dim, and a new and even more talented singer than herself would replace her. What would Franco do to her then? One night, she found herself alone when Franco went out to tend to business, as he often did. Their house was quiet. The bottle of absinthe sent to her by an adoring fan called to her from the ornate marble-topped dresser, a gift shipped to her from a carver in Italy in appreciation for her touring his small city. She looked over at the newly filled prescription and got up from her bed, gliding silently over to the dresser. Her hand slid around the top of the liquid sunshine, her nickname for absinthe, and she caressed it softly. Her life had not been her own since the night Franco found her, singing her heart out in a smoke-filled club for barely enough tips to pay for a taxi home. That night, the night she met Franco, changed her forever. He took her from her pathetic life of abject poverty to a life of luxury, one that she thought only existed in fairy tales. Her life had become a whirlwind of tours, newspaper and magazine articles, television appearances, and more money than God, as Franco liked to say. She owed him everything, but she hated him too. She'd been touring nonstop for 5 years, and the next 5 years were booked as well. She couldn't tell him no. She couldn't refuse anything he asked of her because she feared the beatings he could and would give her. There was only one way out. She opened the bottle of medicine and took two pills, chased down by the green fairy in the bottle of liquid sunshine. Then two more, followed by more sunshine, until the medicine and the green fairy were both gone. She reclined in her soft bed and closed her eyes. She was free, but she wasn't free. She awoke in a dark room, a bright light shining in her face, blinding her. She slowly sat up, shielding her face from the burning heat that came from, she couldn't discern where. As her eyes adjusted to the artificial illumination and the surrounding gloom, she saw that she was sitting in the middle of the brightness, as if she were on stage with a spotlight trained on her. Many times in her career, she sang in the spotlight. But she didn't like how this attention felt. It frightened her. She shook her head. She felt woozy.
Did you really think it would be that easy, Narelle?
She looked around. Who'd spoken to her? She couldn't see anything, but the voice mocked her.
Did you really think that the green fairy could rescue you? I found you. You are mine, and you will remain mine forever.
Narelle bowed her head and wept. The voice belonged to someone that she knew all too well. Franco. He stepped to the edge of the circle. She'd always known what he was, but had refused to allow herself to think about it, until she couldn't bear her life any longer. He was the devil. He was the devil, and her life was hell. She'd never known that the devil could be so handsome, so beguiling, so giving, and so cruel. From his sharp, expensive suit to his perfectly coiffed hair to his manicured nails and gleaming white teeth, he looked every bit a dapper gentleman. But what he was a beast. He was her savior and her bane. She could do nothing but go back to him. She had to.
Now, silly girl, take my hand and come with me, where you belong. You know there will never be any escape from me. I have made you rich beyond compare. I have given you more to live for than most people could dream of. I changed you, molded you, and made you what you wanted to be. You owe me. You will owe me for eternity. And if you try a stunt like this again, it will be your soul that I take.
Norell's eyes snapped up to look into Franco's black ones.
Yes, Narelle. You will continue to fulfill the rest of your debt to me. But now, I will allow you to know as well as see at your next performance exactly what it is that you have been doing for me all these years. I have spared you the truth of what your music does to people until now. You are a silly and petulant child who did not deserve the fame I lavished upon you. From this day forward, you will see the souls that you deliver to me.
Narelle's eyes grew wide with horror. No, it couldn't. I couldn't have.
Oh, yes, Narelle. You have been collecting souls for me all this time, and you will continue to collect souls. With each performance you give, while the crowd stands to ovation, and you bask in the glow of fame untold, I will take their souls, and they will never even know it. Not until they die, and come home to me. Who would have thought, as music is my undoing and yours, if I were to ever hear you sing, that your performances are the easiest way for me to gather souls. So many people in one place. That is why I chose you. I could see the promise in you that others couldn't. The night I saw you on stage in that dive of a bar, I could not hear one word you sang. Still, I knew. Now take my hand, or I can have you sing for the souls of the damned, the souls that you delivered to me for all eternity.
Norell broke down in sobbing despair. So that was why he wore earplugs at every performance she did. That was why they never listened to the radio and why he would not allow her to own a stereo. Even singing in the quiet of her bedroom netted her a terrific beating. So much made sense now, and it should have from long ago, but she was far too happy with her fame to question him or his motives. God had never done her any favors, so what else, who else did she have to turn to for her dream? She had no way of knowing that such immense fame would come with a price that she was not willing to pay. Why should she have to pay anything for her gift? If she was born with it, it was hers, end of story. She shook her head. That kind of tenacity and that mode of strength had been her way of thinking in the early days of her career before she'd been broken by just how cruel God could be. She remembered one time telling a friend, one of the many she had before Franco came into her life, "He gives you a gift, but you can't use it for money. You can only make a little here and there, instead having to rely on other work, meaningless and useless in the grand scheme of things, when others get whatever they want out of life." She never understood why God singled her out to shit on, but it didn't really matter. She had no loyalty to anyone any longer, except herself, but neither could she deny Franco. He was simply too powerful, and she was simply too beaten down. All she wanted was a comfortable life, enough to live her dream, to pay her bills, to have clothes to wear and food to eat. "It's not fair," her mind screamed. She hesitantly reached her hand through the darkness and up to his, and he grasped her wrist so hard that she heard the fragile bones in her wrist crack. She bit her lip to keep from crying out. Franco would not tolerate her tears, and she didn't wish to be beaten again. She knew she had no choice. Now she stood, as she always did, dreading another performance, dreading what she had to do. But the curtain had been raised, and Franco pushed her out of the dressing room and into the wings.
"Now, ladies and gentlemen, introducing what we have all been waiting for, the enchanting, the heavenly, the angel of light, Miss Norell Federconi."
The crowd erupted in wild cheers, and an ovation greeted the lithe and beautiful woman as she stepped into the spotlight. The crowd sat down, and the orchestra began playing, starting with her trademark, "I Am Your Spaniel," from Act One of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Norell's rich soprano voice rang out as Helena, in love with Demetrius. The crowd sat silent, entranced, as she made the music come alive with her otherworldly strains. As she always did, but this time remembering Franco's words that she would see exactly what she did for him, she watched the crowd for the familiar wisps that taunted her at every performance. They weren't so noticeable at first, but then she could see them more clearly as they rose up from each person. They circled slowly, as if knowing that they were doomed, and then drifted over to Franco, who stood inconspicuously at the side exit door. He'd always occupied a spot by the side door, and this time she could see that he was encased in a thick mist, his arms outstretched, his mouth opened, and his eyes closed as he drank in each soul. No one paid any attention to him. Everyone was far too engulfed in the worlds that Norell took them to notice a man that would not garner a second look when she was all that anyone could see. To the common observer, he seemed to be totally enraptured by Norell, a sight that truly was not uncommon. She went right into her next aria, the role of Adriana Lecouvreur, from Act I of the Italian opera, Io son l'umile ancella. The crowd was silent as death as she sang. How sad that they did not even realize that they were dying, that by the time the performance was over, they would be dead. At least their souls would be, trapped, enslaved to a dark lord that showed no regret and no mercy. As she finished, the crowd could contain its enthusiasm no longer, and cheers abounded from deep within the audience. She smiled through her tears and continued to her last performance of the evening, as Agrippina from Act I of the Italian opera, L'Alma Mia Fra la Tempeste. She sang her heart out as she watched the last of the souls from those unwitting victims fill Franco with the sustenance he wished for. She would be free this night. She could not, would not, continue to damn people because they made the mistake of loving her voice and wishing to see her. She bowed her head as the last words trailed from her lips. The room was silent for just a moment before the crowd roared with appreciation. The entire auditorium rose to their feet with shouts of brava, and roses fell at her feet on the dimly lit stage. She knelt and picked up a dark red rose, then a white one, and then a yellow one. Holding them aloft, she slowly and gracefully curtsied. This would be a fitting way for her to go out, with the sounds of her adoring fans in her ears.
You did well tonight, my dear Norell. I am pleased.
Norell nodded slowly. Franco sat down and closed his eyes for just a moment, and that was all Norell needed. She picked up the heavy angel statue that she brought to each performance and bashed Franco in the head as hard as she could. Franco never knew what hit him.
Oh, Franco! Franco! Wakey, wakey, you son of a bitch!
Franco's eyes snapped open, and he tried to get up, but Norell had secured him steadfastly to the chair with a roll of duct tape. Franco's earplugs sat conspicuously in his lap. Franco tried to speak, but Norell had saved the last piece of tape to silence the devil's protests.
No, what's the matter, master? Shocked that you were so easily caught?
Norell huffed.
I should have done this ages ago. What good are fame and fortune when your boss is the devil?
Norell looked over at the angel statue. There had been a time when she believed in the power of angels. Now she believed in nothing. Life had caused her to be bitter and caustic, and now she wished that life gone. God had abandoned her. Satan asked too much, and since she had abandoned one God, why should she replace it with another just as useless and hatefully cruel? She needed no God. She needed only release, and that was exactly what she'd have.
Oh, yes, Franco. I will sing for you now. As you told me so long ago, music is your bane. I want to die, and you will be coming with me.
She smiled.
Besides, I wish to see for myself what my music will do to you. You were kind enough to show me what my music does for you. Now I'd like to see what it will do to you. I owe you that much. At least I will be rid of you once and for all.
Franco's eyes grew wide with fear, and he tried to wriggle free from his bonds, but he was helpless. As Norell opened her mouth, she relished the fear and the look of pleading desperation that swallowed Franco's face.
There was a time when men were kind, when their words were soft and their words inviting.
Franco's muffled squeals were awful, but Norell sang. Like she'd never sung before, she sang. Franco began to smoke, and then his skin began melting from the bone. Norell was both shocked and saddened by the demise of her captor. like a candle melting after burning far too long. Franco simply seemed to burn away, his skin followed by his internal organs dripping in small rivulets down his body and onto the floor. A puddle of blood and wasted, empty organs pooled at his feet as his body continued to liquefy from its foundation. Norell began to feel weak, but she continued to sing, her voice clear and strong.
And the world was a song, and the song was exciting. There was a time when it all went wrong. And still I dream he'll come to me. That we will live the years together. But there are dreams that cannot be. And there are storms we cannot weather.
With one final jerk of his frame, Franco's bloody skull snapped forward to the floor and rolled to Norell's feet. She knelt down and with a frail hand picked it up, clutching it as an actor would a prop. But she would never rise to her feet again. On her knees, she cuddled the bloody skull, her voice breaking as her heart slowed, slowed.
I had a dream my life would be so different from this hell I'm living, so different now from what it seemed.
As her vision darkened, the skull tumbled from her hands, and her body fell with a dull thud to the floor.
Now life has killed the dream I dream.
I am not a churchy girl, but I will share a couple of lessons I got from this story. One, always look a gift horse in the mouth. Two, if you make money and fame your god, it will plague you like the devil. Food for thought. Intro and outro music is The Cove by The Contrarian. And certain sound effects were borrowed from the Free Sound Project. This Shadowcast episode was licensed under a Creative Commons Attributions Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. That means share it with a friend, share it with a family, share it with an enemy as a warning, just don't sell it. Once again, I thank you all for having me back as your guest host for this episode. I wish you all a wicked weekend. You guys take care and have fun.